memoir, Prisoner of the State, will be speaking here on Thursday, June 4th, although I believe that event is sold out. Also next Tuesday, Jasper Becker will be speaking about one of his passions, namely Old Beijing, or what little remains of it. This month marks the 60th anniversary of our relocation from Chongqing to Hong Kong. We are, in fact, 66 years old this year, having been established in China's wartime capital in 1943. In Gilbert's office, our general manager's office, we have two registration documents from the Hong Kong government. One is dated June 23, 1949, the other June 25th. Rather than choose between the two, we decided to make a month-long celebration of it through events such as today's lunch, because after all, an excuse to drink for 30 days is better than an excuse to drink for just two or three. Today's speaker, Cardinal Joseph Zen, beat us to Hong Kong by about a year. He arrived from the other end of the Yangtze River, from Shanghai, in the summer of 1948. Now, there's very little about Cardinal Zen that I can tell you that you don't already know. So let me just share with you a very short anecdote. A few years ago, in an interview with my newspaper, the Financial Times, Martin Lee was reflecting on the coming end of his political career and talking about some of the moments along the way, and he mentioned the right of abode controversy from the late 1990s. And you'll remember that Tung Chi Hwa's administration decreed that the so-called right of abode children, many of whom were stuck in the territory pending what turned out to be a very long and protracted legal battle, could not attend government schools. Cardinal Zen ordered Catholic schools to take them in. And as Martin Lee told us, and this is Mr. Lee's quote, he said, "I would have liked to speak up for the right of abode children, but my party wouldn't let me because politically it wasn't the smart thing to do. Cardinal Zen is the real conscience of Hong Kong," with all due respects to Anson Chen. The importance that Hong Kong plays as a place where voices of conscience can still speak is never more apparent than during the first week of June. So we are honored to have a real voice of conscience as our first guest this anniversary month. Cardinal Zen, thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, I have chosen a topic of this sharing. The sentence in Latin which says, contra spem in spem credidit, which is a quotation from the letter of St. Paul to the Romans, which says, though there seemed no hope, he hoped and believed. That refers to Abraham. And we all remember what happened to him, our father in faith. At the calling of God, he left behind everything he was familiar to and threw himself into an unknown future. Then at an old age, he believed the promise of God to give him a son. Then he was ready to sacrifice his only son at God's command. Now, I don't dare to apply this laudatory expression to myself, but this unwavering hope and faith must be an example for all of us to imitate. I'm not going to give a speech, but just a little sharing based on this expression, because it fits very well my feelings when I meditate. I would spend 5 minutes on each of the three topics. One is meditating this expression from my personal situation in this moment. The second is when we face the social-political situation since June the 4th. And then also facing the present situation of the church in China. The first, from my personal situation in this moment, when I retire from the office of Bishop of Hong Kong. 12 years of service, not too short, not too long. When they made me a coadjutor bishop in 96, the year 97 was approaching, and then a new situation in Hong Kong took place. And so there's a new job in the church. Actually, my job is more within the church. But then in the society, people may think that I'm doing so much in the society, and you are more interested in that aspect of my life. Now, in this moment when I retire, some people ask, do you have any regret? I said, no. Because I try always to follow my conscience, to follow the teaching of the church. But then the saying of St. Paul applies to me, because there are moments when there seems to be no hope. Because in the many fights we had, it seems that my fate was to always to fail, to be defeated. Like the right of a vote, the defense of civil liberties, the social justice, and also the freedom in running schools. So a list of defeats. But then I remember what Mother Teresa used to say, that God does not expect us to be always successful, but to be faithful. So I really could always be very peaceful in my heart, no real pressure, no hatred, and also no regret. Surely I made some small mistakes, but we know that God is merciful and forgives very easily. So I still hope that all the battles we have started may still one day be victorious, because God has his time, and we should always hope and have faith. And this is true also when now we commemorate the June the 4th. In 2003, when I joined the prayer meeting in the Victoria Park, somebody asked me, Bishop, are you coming back again the next year? I said, sure, we are coming back next year to celebrate the vindication of June the 4th. I was not a good prophet. But then I think the saying of St. Paul again can apply. We have to hope. And in the meantime, we have to persevere. We have always to stand on the side of truth, of justice. Unfortunately, I said many times that after the handover, there is a new culture, the culture of toting the powerful and oppressing the weak. And so I'm very happy to see that in the occasion of this 20th anniversary, we had such a wonderful march yesterday, and I'm sure the candle vigil is going to be a big crowd. In the church, in our liturgy, we start reading the book of Tobias. And it is very inspiring, because this holy man risked his own life to bury the dead. He was in exile in Babylon, and they killed Israelite people, and not even allowing for a burial. This holy man even left his meal, go to take the body, and then in the darkness of night, he used to bury them. Now, why risk the life of a living man for a dead body? I think we have to remember the values. If you don't respect the dead body, you cannot even respect a living man. And there is a need that the justice be made, not only for the consolation of the living parents of those young men, but also to teach the future generations what is right, what is wrong, and also to prevent that such tragedies can be repeated. So I feel very proud that the Hong Kong people can still be very stubborn, if you want to say, in celebrating this anniversary, to remember those died, to remember those who are still suffering, and to demand that the truth should be made clear. But then I come to the last point, which is more important to my heart, which is the situation of the church in China. Now, if you go to visit China, you can see the churches open, and many people go, and they sing beautifully. So you say there's big progress. Sure. And I also enjoy that progress in the years between 89 and 96, when I could go to teach in the seminaries with freedom. But then, if you want me to answer whether there is real freedom, I'm sorry I have to say that there is no real freedom. Because freedom is something integral. Either you have it or you don't have it. Like the bird in a cage. You may have a small cage, you have a very big cage. But if the bird is in a cage, it's not free. And in China, at least the Catholic Church is not free. The Pope has written a letter last year, a wonderful letter, which achieved a wonderful balance between the clarity of principles and the kindness and understanding of the people. There, the Holy Father says, the Catholic Church is one Catholic and apostolic, comes from the apostles. And so the leaders in the church should be the Pope and the bishops. But now in China, other people are leading the church. The church in China and the government actually made very good steps towards a mutual compromise. But unfortunately, those people who in these many years have acquired position and also advantage, they don't want to change the situation. So the Pope's letter is not being respected. I just want to tell you the last episode, which happened in December. They celebrated the 50 years of the first ordination of bishop without permission of the Holy See. By that time, I just had the chance to go to Rome for a meeting, so I asked to see the Holy Father. Actually, there was no news in foreign language. There was only news in Chinese. So when the Holy Father learned about that, he said, that's a provocation. Surely it was. So the Holy See did something. they asked the central government of Beijing, what is happening? The answer is that, oh, they were not aware of such a plan. And they say, but now it's too late to cancel it. Huh? So we try to tone it down. But actually, it took place on the 19th of December with 300 Catholics taking part, 45 bishops, and six of them made speeches. And the speeches is always in support of independent church and for self-chosen, self-consecrated bishops. Now, this surely is unacceptable. I wrote an article on our weekly in Hong Kong, which appeared on the 4th of January in Chinese and the 11th of January in English, a very strong article. But no reaction. So that means the government doesn't want to have bad news. So why they allow such things to happen? Now, our worry is not so much for what happened, but for what may be going to happen soon. I think we are really at a very dangerous moment. In the church recognized by the government, the highest organization is the so-called Assembly of the Catholics, which meets every 5 years or every time they need to elect the chairman of the Patriarch Association and the chairman of the Bishops' Conference. Now, it is long due such a meeting because both the chairman of Patriarch Association and the chairman of Bishop Conference died a few years ago. And so they announced that in the second half of this year, they may hold such a meeting. And I think what happened in December was just a preparation, a test to see whether they can really control and force all the bishops to join such meetings. And I have had a witness of such a meeting, and the election is just a farce because there is the vice chairman of the Petit Association. He comes out and then he says, today we have to make these two elections, and we know that we have already a consensus, and so the two are elected by acclamation. And the meeting is held not only with the Catholics, but in front of the bishops, priests, sisters, and Catholics, there are the officials of the government sitting in front to preside. So that's an insult, a humiliation to our bishops. And after the letter of the Holy Father, this is not acceptable. But there is a danger that several bishops who have been, even after the letter of the Holy Father, to the celebration of the 50 years of the Patriarch Association, then to the 50 years of the illegitimate ordination of bishops, now very probably they may go. Because in this moment, I'm sorry to say that the corruption has entered also the church. The government bribes our bishops. We know for sure that to one of the bishops who went to a illegitimate ordination of bishop, they gave 200,000 renminbi. To another one, they gave 700,000 renminbi. So that's what is happening in the church in China. So we have to be worried. Now, as the expression of St. Paul says, even when there seems to be no hope, we still hope. And the Holy Father, in his letter, has invited the whole church to pray. And we believe in prayer. And Holy Father wants especially to pray Our Lady, which is venerated in the Holy Shrine in Shanghai, with the title of Help of Christians. And all over the world, not only the Chinese people, but all the Catholics pray during the month of May. So both for the our country and for the church, our hope is that God surely has his time and he is guiding the history, but we hope that what we are hoping for may come soon, and so that the truth may reign instead of falsity, and the peace may come, which is the true peace, not just the so-called stability, which is only imposition of the existing order. So we believers, we always nurture in our heart the faith and the hope, I hope in the meantime this faith and hope can give us strength to work hard with all the means, and also because the providence has given us such a fortunate situation of freedom, and we must avail ourselves of this freedom to work for the future, for our nation and for our church. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Cardinal. We always have a big hush when our speakers are talking here from our audience, but I think the hush was even deeper than normal today. We do have about 15-20 minutes for questions, and if there are any from the floor, please raise your hand and identify yourself, especially if you're from the Catholic Patriotic Association. Perhaps I could just start, Cardinal, by asking you, could you just tell the audience what you're doing now? You're an advisor to the Pope, and in what capacity? You're not exactly retired, I understand.
And the cardinals are all advisors to the Holy Father. But then for the church in China, now we have a commission, which started more than 1 year ago, a commission for the church in China. The commission is made of 35 persons, more or less. That means the whole Secretariat of State, the whole Congregation for Evangelization, five Chinese bishops, two from Hong Kong, two from Taiwan, one from Macau, and then the 10 experts, mainly from the missionary congregations and from the centers which care for the church in China. And that the whole commission meets once a year for 3 days. And then there is a standing committee which meets other three times, once in November, in January, and in May, but this time it's postponed to June. So in those meetings, this standing committee is only half-day meeting, a short meeting. And so in those meetings, we discuss the problems, and then our conclusion are given to the Holy Father. And so the commission is of advisory nature. Surely, as cardinal, I have all the opportunity also to communicate with Holy Father even out of those meetings.
And you're flying to Rome tonight, is that right? Yeah. Question here, Kinming, please.
Thank you. Kinming Liu, an executive at the Hong Kong Economic Journal. On a recent visit to Rome, I was very happy to see that the flag of Taiwan was still prominently displayed on the avenue leading to St. Paul's. Is the Holy See still prepared to abandon Taiwan, which is free and democratic, and recognize China, which is neither? Thank you.
Some years ago, Cardinal Casalotti, then Secretary of State, used to say that there is no problem to abandon Taiwan. And then the Cardinal Sodano, before the present Secretary of State, he said something similar. He said, oh, our nunciature in Taiwan is nunciature in China. So if Beijing agrees, we may move it to Beijing. I don't say tomorrow, but even tonight. But those expressions are not very kind to Taiwan people. Actually, the last paper nuncio to Taiwan, Cardinal Cassidy, he used to say that I see problem because the church, I mean the Vatican, has never abandoned a friendly nation unilaterally. But then you can also understand that maybe the Holy See has to change that political situation, that diplomatic situation, because if you want to talk to Chinese government or mainland, you must have a diplomatic relation. Then you cannot keep the relation with Taiwan. So it seems that it's given for granted that one day they have to switch that diplomatic relation. But then, obviously, this supposes that by doing so, they can really the church can really get a religious freedom in China. Otherwise, it would be ridiculous to abandon a friend. But in this moment, maybe there's not much hurry because, you know, the relation between Beijing and Taiwan has improved with Ma Ying-jeou. So maybe there is already a secret agreement that Taiwan may keep all those small states, in Africa, in South America, but also the Vatican is one among those small states which Taiwan can keep. So maybe Beijing now is not in a hurry to have the diplomatic relation. That makes things even more difficult for the Holy See. But anyway, I think they should understand that a normalization of the church is good for our nation, even apart from the diplomatic relation.
A question in the back, please. Way in the back.
This is Benjamino Natale for Italian News Agency. Cardinal, can you explain to us what is the present situation with the choosing the bishop? Are you in touch? The Catholic Church is in touch with somebody in China. Are they consulting you on the problem of choosing the next bishop who are coming? Thank you.
I mean, choosing bishops in China, you may. Now, as I just mentioned briefly, both sides has come to an improvement. That means the old bishops in China ordained illegitimately have almost all been recognized by the Holy See. And then the new bishops chosen by election, they know that they need approval from the Holy See, and they got approval in most of the cases because the Holy See is very understanding and so accept the elected candidates if there's no serious objection. And so the Holy See has made big steps in compromise and in concession. And also the government pretend not to know all this, so they didn't reproach or disqualify all those bishops in relation with the Holy See. So by this time, I think that they could reach an agreement. And in the letter of the Holy Father, he mentions such a possibility. But in the 2006, three illegitimate ordination happened. And we explained that by supposing that it doesn't come really from the central government. It's more from those people down there, the Religious Affairs Bureau, the Patriotic Association. They are people with acquired position of power and advantage. They don't want to see a normalization. And so in this moment, the situation is, very fluid. They abstain from ordaining illegitimate bishop for some time now, but we can never be sure because there are other things going on which, make us very much worried. They may again resume such illegitimate ordination.
Cardinal, do you know roughly how many bishops there are in China and how many, what percentage would be recognized by the Holy See?
The bishops in the Open Church, I think there are more than 60. Those not yet recognized by the Church are less than 10. They are very few. So the great majority are all already reconciled with the Holy See.
Any other questions from the floor? The working press, too, in the back corner. The French journalist, please. Get you next, Francis. Sorry. Sorry, in the back corner.
Thank you. I'm Florence Dechangy with different French media. Cardinal Zen, what will it take, do you think, to the Beijing authorities to assess one day what happened on June 89? And do you see this happening? Could it happen this year because it's 20 years? Should we wait another 5, 10, 20 years?
Now, the things in China are always unpredictable. So it may happen tomorrow. It may still take 20 years. But I think nowadays it should be easy. Now, we heard from Mr. Cheng Yuxian saying that if they have to the change the verdict, then you have to touch Mr. Deng Xiaoping. But then what? Why we cannot touch Deng Xiaoping? They could make an assessment even of Mao Zedong, is it? They say 70-30. So why we cannot say that Deng Xiaoping was wrong in this? He may be right in many other things. So I think it should be easy now, after 20 years, to make a new assessment. And by the way, they say that we have re-examined the thing many times. Okay, once more, you may make a better assessment. So I hope they really consider seriously the possibility of a reverse of the verdict, because it will not damaging anybody, but would be to the advantage of the whole nation.
Thank you. Francis?
Francis Moriarty, RTHK. I suppose my question is in some respects connected to that one. Is the 20th anniversary of any particular significance? And will you yourself be present for the candlelight vigil?
I think it's important because 20 years are many. Unfortunately, this year I will not be here because I'm leaving tonight. We have a meeting in Rome the 3rd and 4th of June. It's the post-synodal council. After the synod, we have to help the Holy Father to prepare a document, and so I will not be in Hong Kong. But fortunately, we had a mass the other day, the 29th, Friday evening, we had a mass, and so I could also deliver a sermon to express my feelings and my reflections on the occasion.
You say it's very important, but what is that particular importance? Is it because now we have the Zhao Ziyang memoirs? Is it just because it's a number 20? Why is it special?
Every year is important. We have to keep persevering on the topic. And every year we hope this is the last year, and we have to wait. But 20 years is 20, 10, 20 are, you know, round numbers. And so it's a little special.
A question from the gentleman standing in the back. Thank you.
Hi, Cardinal Zen. Min Li from the Associated Press. Can you just clarify, when was the last time that China illegally ordained a bishop, and what kind of exchanges between the Vatican and the Chinese government were there about that?
I don't know exactly the date, but there were illegitimate ordination three in 2006, but then after that we had also three or four legitimate ordination bishops accepted both by the Holy See and by the government. So things can be ironed out. So there is no need of a confrontation going on. So I think it's still those people who have a acquired position of advantage, they are resisting. And so I really hope that the real leaders may take seriously this problem.
Microphone in front, please.
Thank you very much. Cardinal Zen, you are one of the chief guardians of the Catholic Church in China. You speak to the Holy Father about the church. I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about the spiritual health of the church in China. How threatened do you feel the church is?
How healthy is the church in China?
Healthy.
Yes, spiritual.
No, I'm always frank, but maybe a little risky to say that my impression is that the situation is worsening. It's worsening because the so-called underground community is feeling frustrated, discouraged, because of a policy of the Holy See, which is otherwise good, but not so good for the underground church, is that in these last years, several bishops were made for the open church, but not for the underground. So they feel a little neglected, or maybe even not so appreciated by the Holy See. Then in the open church, many things happened, which is a contradiction to what they are supposed to be. I mean, since the great majority, with very few exceptions, of those bishops are all in communion with the Holy See, but they don't put acts coherent with that state of communion with the Holy See. So they went to celebrate the 50 years of the Patriarchal Association, which the Holy Father, his letter says, that is not acceptable. And then they went to celebrate the 50 years of the illegitimate ordination. So it seems that they are going down in the slope. So in the article I mentioned, I try to remind them of their duty to be faithful to that communion with the Holy See. It may sound a little cruel that I'm living here in full freedom, and I want to reproach my brothers who are suffering so much under heavy pressure. But then we have to remind the bishops that they should be leaders. They should be coherent to their state of communion with the Holy Father. And otherwise, at a certain moment, you touch the button. And then how can you still say, how can a bishop say that he is in communion with the Holy Father when every moment he shouts that I support independent church? It's contradictory. And so, really, I'm very much worried.
A question right here, please.
Thank you, Elaine Pickering. As a retiring leader, our chief executive is a practicing Catholic. As a retiring leader, what words of advice would you have to him as he continues to lead and you're retiring now? That's the first question. And the second question is we've become very accustomed to you platforming values of the church in the community. Do you think the church will continue to have a vocal voice in the community over issues of that's important to it as you retire? Thank you.
Sorry, could you repeat the first question? It was advice to...
To our current chief executive, who's a president, a practicing Catholic. What words of advice would you have to him as he continues to lead and Cardinal Zen is now retiring?
Just what advice would you have for Donald Zen?
I don't think your question is very diplomatic. To ask me to say, to give advice. Actually, you may remember that once I made a gift to Donald-san, a ring. A ring on which there is the figure of Good Shepherd. So I said, in the church, we say the bishop is Good Shepherd, but also in the society, you are Good Shepherd. So I think the Good Shepherd cares for the weak sheep. So I hope in this capitalist society, the leaders should care more for the weak people, especially in the moments of difficulty. But unfortunately, many provisions from the government are not helping the weak people, the poor people. So I hope we can make the capitalism more humane, so that the gap between the rich and the poor should be, instead of being widened.
The second part was just, you're not the retiring type, obviously, but will you continue to be very vocal and outspoken, or are you going to fade away?
I have retired from being the bishop of Hong Kong, of the Diocese of Hong Kong, but not retired from activity. So I am still a retired bishop. I'm a cardinal, and so I have to work for the church. Now, surely, I suppose I may be less vocal because all the problems about Hong Kong, I think, should be left to the new bishop. But in the case of June the 4th, which is about our whole nation, I think I am still entitled to have my voice.
Cardinal, could I just follow up? You mentioned just recently something you've talked about before, which is a change in society, the strong preying on the weak, and you said this is something you've noticed and it's a change. I'm just curious, hasn't Hong Kong always been kind of like that? How was it different in the 60s, the 70s? When did that change? When did you start to notice that change?
Maybe I cannot prove that, but... I just remember when we came here to discuss the Article 23, and I remember after the meeting, some report were still not certified. They want to make some other question, during those days, two disposition came from the government. One is to say that those people coming from China should wait 7 years before they can get the subsidy. The other one is about the $400 of levy for the domestic helpers. And I thought that was very bad. Those are acts of discrimination against the poor, against the weak. And I remember I just told the reporter. Then that evening, in one of the phoning program, somebody blamed me. Said, "Oh, you bishop, you know everything. You have to speak on every subject." I said, "No, because those were the two subjects which, you know, came fresh those days." So I think from those things you can agree with me that we have a new culture of.
Perhaps when the Democratic Party decided not to stand up for the right of Oboe children. Happy to take one last question, although we are right up against 2 o'clock. I think perhaps we should end it here. We do have a small token of appreciation for you, Cardinal. Thank you very much for a very interesting and stimulating discussion today.
Thank you.
Let me just close by noting, some of you may have seen a report in the Apple Daily yesterday that because Cardinal Zen was going to be speaking here, the FCC's website had been blocked in China. I was very disappointed to learn from my colleague in Shanghai this morning that, in fact, our website is still accessible in China, but we did discuss before this, we had hoped that Cardinal Zen might get us blocked during the course of his talk, so ask your colleagues in China if they can log on to fcchk.org. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Please, take more. Yes, can we do a picture with you?